The other thing I will just point out as you move through the slides, if you haven't already had a look at them, you'll see what we've tried to do is provide you with an ample amount of QR codes so you could directly access our web pages as well as links. So we just encourage you to utilize those resources as you see them as we move through the slides. Next slide, please, Brittany. So just by way of agenda, what are we doing here today is we'll just provide just a little bit myself, just a little bit of an overview. And this slide also reminds me to just pause for a second and welcome you all. First, to thank you for your interest in this RFA and for taking the time to join us today. And as I mentioned, it is the P42 request for applications. We will go through the applications. Daniel Carlin, Brittany Trottier, who are the program administrators. And then we will also have Jenny Greer provide an overview of some of the budget, Terry considerations, and Jenny Greer is the chief of our grants management branch here at NIHS. And then we'll leave some time for question and answers. And so as you have them pop into your head, we encourage you to go ahead and use that Q&A box that Pete just tested you on. And I think everyone did a really good job getting that done. But please put your questions in. And as I said, we're going to do our best to be able to answer them for you at the end of the webinar. And if we can't, we'll do our best to follow up. We also intend to have a frequently asked questions page on our website, which you will see several times the ability to link directly to the website. Next slide, please, Brittany. So this slide here is just, why do we have this RFA? Well, this is our Superfund Research Program legislation. So we're mandated under the Superfund Amendments and Reauthorization Act, or SARA, of 1986. And this just gives NIHS the flexibility to create university-based centers to conduct scientific research to address the right away of scientific uncertainties that are facing the National Superfund Research or Superfund program. So the scope of the centers is to taken directly from our mandates, and this includes advanced techniques for the detection, assessment, and evaluation of the human effects of hazardous substances, methods to assess the risk to human health presented by hazardous substances, methods and technologies to detect hazardous substances in the environment, and then basic biological, chemical, and physical methods to reduce the amount and toxicity of hazardous substances. So, as you can see, the complex, I'm sure you all appreciate the complex problems related to sites impacted by hazardous substances require the expertise of both biomedical and environmental science and engineering disciplines. And this is why we have developed the P40 program as it's been developed. Next slide, please. So this is an overview to let you know that we have other funding mechanisms. While the focus of this particular webinar will present to you the recent notice of funding opportunity or request for applications, you might hear us interchange those for the P42 Center grants. We also support small business grants. We also support unsolicited research project grants or R01s. And we also support the smaller grants, so RO3s, as well as R21s, which are the exploratory and developmental grants. I won't go through all the due dates, but what we have provided for you are the due dates and links if you do download the slides. And again, we encourage you to do that. And then we'll just point out for us, obviously, we want to be anything that we're able to consider for recommending for supporting, it needs to be Superfund relevant. Also, on the right side of this slide, I want to point out that there is a different way of getting. We've transitioned from grants.nih.gov, and it's transitioned to simpler grants.gov. So you've probably seen that as you look through the RFA. You've probably seen that as you're navigating the NIH web pages. So just to be aware that things may just be a little bit different from what you have been used to, but hopefully similar enough where it won't pose any problems. And then just to point out, just almost to the in the middle right there is just if you want to put your camera up to that QR code. That's where you're going to find those funding opportunities that we mentioned. But today we are going to focus on the P42 mechanism. Next slide, please, Brittany. So this is to orient you to the funding opportunities webpage. Now, from our RFA, we do link you to this page, and we just wanted to let you know, well, where are you going to find all this information? So what you need to do is once you land on the funding opportunities page, you're going to see the multi-project center grants that is colored in red. If you click that button, that is where you're going to find those other resources that we've pointed to you from the RFA. So that's the RFA itself, linking to simplergrants.nih.gov, as well as examples of tables for the application, suggested research and activities, as well as the program contacts. And we'll go through the program contacts towards the end of the presentation. I believe now I am turning this over to one of the program officers, Danielle Carlin.
Thank you, Michelle. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Okay, great. So I wanted to mention that for this, we're going to try to cover most of the aspects of the NOFO in this presentation, but this by no means is all the information that's provided in our NOFO. So it's really important that you read the entire NOFO, and we're suggesting perhaps several times, and to also look over all the resources we provided on our website. So, for example, we've provided suggested research and activities as well as additional resources. And again, this webinar presentation is meant to complement the NOFO and to address your questions, but we will not have time to go over the NOFO in extensive detail. So before we continue, I also wanted to reiterate the importance of reaching out to us using the nofo.information@niehs.nih.gov email address, as well as to the SRP staff. You'll hear more from most of us today if you're considering applying to this NOFO. And it's best to contact us to ensure that you will be responsive to this RFA. We know that it's a lot of work to put one of these applications together, and we really want you to be successful in this endeavor. So we're also providing the email addresses for our grants management and review. So if you have any questions, we definitely encourage you to reach out to them using those email addresses. Okay, next slide, Brittany. So I just wanted to remind everyone of the key dates that are listed on the NOFO and that you'll need to adhere to those application due dates. So in other words, late applications will not be accepted. Also note that we have three due dates now. They're separated by a year for three application due dates. The scientific review will occur in approximately September of 2026, 27, and 28. And then we'll have our council review likely in January of 2027, 28, and 29. And then the earliest start dates for awards will also be approximately May of 2027, 28, and 29. Next slide, please. So we encourage you to carefully read the section of the NOFO that is titled Scope of the SRP Center Grant. So the scope of the SRP Center grant is defined by its mandates, which you've heard from Michelle, and we've listed them here again here on the left. And research and supporting activities under this NOFO may utilize a variety of approaches to achieve the SRP mandates. So please review carefully the NOFO and the suggested research topics and activities document and our other website resources for ideas of how you can fulfill the mandates of the SRP. It's not a requirement to fulfill all the mandates, but it would be of benefit that you mention in your application which mandates you are trying to fulfill. It's also important that you provide information on how your research will be relevant to Superfund, the impact to end users, and to show innovation, which should be multidisciplinary and paradigm shifting. It's also important to note that the SRP is not a site-specific program. However, in the most broad sense, hazardous substances found at Superfund sites are relevant to SRP. Applicants may refer to CERCLA, to the CERCLA Priority List website for more information on hazardous substances associated with Superfund sites, and we've provided the link here. Other substances include hazardous breakdown products of the mentioned substances formed in environmental media by physical, chemical, or biological processes and hazardous metabolites of the above substances or their breakdown products formed after exposure in humans or experimental animal models. Again, please refer to the additional resources link on the second website for a list of hazardous substances, including emerging contaminants, that have been suggested by SRP's sister agencies, which are EPA and ATSDR. It's also important that if you have any questions about which hazardous substances you should consider studying as a part of your center application, please do not hesitate to contact one of us. And when you're looking for topics for your center application, it's also important to consider programmatic balance. So this is something that we as program officers and staff pay attention to when we're making recommendations for which centers to ultimately support. You can see who we fund by visiting our website about who we currently and previously fund. And we are hosting, and I just want to mention too that there's I think this might be mentioned, I apologize. I'm seeing a note here about progress in research webinars, which we just had one, I believe it was on Monday. So I think we could share more information about if you want to see what our currently funded grantees are doing. And you can also look for topics on the suggested research topics and activities, which contains information about high priority areas for SRP stakeholders. And in addition, applicants should ensure their applications are in alignment with NIH priorities. And finally, in the broadest sense, the center should demonstrate a clear link to Superfund. Next slide, please. So in addition to our mandates, we also want to stress our continued dedication to program relevance and our key end users as the Superfund programs at the US EPA and ATSDR, as well as other entities responsible for sites impacted by hazardous substances and the communities living near these sites. So during today's presentation, we encourage you to consider how to design meritorious scientific studies and centers that are relevant to key end users. And that will make an impact to Superfund and will bring innovation to the practice of managing hazardous substances. Next slide, please. So this pie chart shows you that a P42 center should consist of the following components. Centers should be comprised of a minimum of 3 with a maximum of 4 research projects and should be in combination and could be a combination of 2 biomedical and 2 environmental science and engineering, or 2 biomedical and 1 environmental science and engineering, and or 1 biomedical and 2 environmental science and engineering projects. Required cores include the administrative core, which includes administrative, data management, and training support functions, and the translational research and engagement core. So as an option, a center may have 1 research support core. Also, a center application cannot exceed a total of 7 components. So budget-wise, centers may request up to $1.7 million per year in direct costs for 5 years, and there are some cost limitations. Cores have to sum up to less than or equal to 25% of the total center budget, and that is the administrative core plus the TREC, which is known as the Translational Research and Engagement Core. The Research Support Core has no set budget. So for those of you that are submitting a revised application or a renewal, you may notice some changes shown here by the arrows, and these were put in place to simply simplify the overall P42 center structure, but you will notice that we have kept the activities from the previous P42 centers. So now I'm going to go through the overall component of the P42 center application. Next slide, please. So as you carefully read the NOFO, you will notice the following other attachments, which should be included with the overall component to aid in the review of applications. The file name provided for each attachment will be the name used for the bookmark in the application image. Specific descriptions are provided for each of these attachments in the NOFO. We also provide example illustrations of these on our website. You should also submit a resource sharing plan for sharing of model organisms and research tools. So for example, if you create a new model organism as a part of your research, a resource sharing plan must be submitted. And I'm sure that you all have heard that NIH grant applications require a data management and sharing plan. We also call that for short the DMSP. So the DMSP that covers the entire center should be attached in the other plans. And for more information on how to complete the DMSP and where to attach it is found here. The DMSP is required and must be provided in the overall component. Also note that the DMSP will not be available to the reviewers. Policies around the DMSPs are rapidly evolving, so please check the website and any NIH notices for any updates that may apply to your application. And as you're developing the research strategy, which is limited to 12 pages, we recommend the following sections: significance and relevance to SRP mandates and Superfund, the research team, innovation, approach, environment, and center integration. Next slide, please. So this is just showing you an example of what one of the tables might look like. So this is the table of integration with the center. And that you would include with the overall component of your P42 application. And if you follow this last link, we've provided examples of the other tables. And we hope that these illustrations will be helpful to you as you put together your application. Next slide, please. So now we move on to the administrative core. The administrative core, which includes the center director, center administrator, training coordinator, and the data management coordinator. And they will all provide leadership and guidance to ensure the synthesis of findings and activities from research projects and cores, and that those are used towards addressing the central problem or objective proposed by the center. The core should also provide points of contact for regular SRP-hosted conference calls and webinars on training and data management. The administrative core will be responsible for ensuring that updates are made to the optional SRP data collection tool, and the link is provided in this slide, and should designate points of contact responsible for reporting this information, as well as a plan for frequency of reporting. A point of contact should be indicated in the research strategy section for the regular SRP training and data management webinars. And so for those of you that are new to SRP, the data collection tool allows current grant recipients to inform SRP staff of center activities such as webinars, meetings, interactions with stakeholders, training, investigator awards, news articles, and publications. The SRP data collection tool are only for active grant recipients, and their use only really applies to those that are submitting competitive renewal grant applications. However, new applicants will want to mention how they will use the tool in their applications. Next slide, please. So now we'll go into a little more detail on the administrative core. I'm not going to read this list to you verbatim, as these are straight from the NOFO, but you can see that the administrative core needs to demonstrate leadership. And here are some of the ways that the core can show leadership. The application should also include a description of the lines of communication among the center director, the center administrator, the training coordinator, and the data management coordinator, and the center's projects and core leaders. There should also be a description of the mechanisms to be used to encourage and ensure the integration and interaction between the biomedical and environmental science and engineering projects. It should also have a plan for coordinating data sharing and training activities, integration of cross-disciplinary research, overseeing of fiscal and resource management, and providing quality management. The core should also describe a strategy for personnel management changes and succession plans as applicable. Next slide, please. So to aid the center in achieving its goals, the administrative core is also required to establish an external advisory committee. And they're there to provide guidance to the center director in the following areas. It's the scientific merit of the research and productivity, the relevance and importance of the individual components to the goals of the center, the SRP mandates and Superfund, the integration of research across disciplines and components, the effectiveness of data management activities in linking projects within the center and other opportunities for data exchange with external data resources or other end users, the effectiveness of translational research and engagement functions in linking projects to end users, the appropriateness of training activities, especially those that are cross-disciplinary, and then discussion of projects that should be continued, modified, or discontinued, and a strategy for making those changes to any projects. The composition of the EAC should reflect the goals of the center and should include appropriate scientific expertise and appropriate end users and stakeholders. And those are, for example, representatives from federal, state, local agencies, as well as EPA, ATSDR, industry, and or community organizations. So all applicants should list the anticipated or target areas of expertise for the EAC members. But note, those applicants submitting a Type 2 application would provide the names of the EAC members, but new applicants, those that are submitting a Type 1, should not list names of anticipated external advisory members unless they provided substantial input into the design of the application. And finally, we want to mention that the center director must commit a minimum of 1.8 person months. Next slide, please. So the administrative core also includes a data management element that should be led by the data management coordinator. So the SRP acknowledges the integration of data from a broad range of scientific disciplines will be critical to understanding and breaking the link between exposures and disease. So to support the NIH data sharing policy, the administrative core and its data management coordinator are tasked with leveraging institutional and computing infrastructure to support the management and integration of data assets across the center. They are expected to work closely with project core leaders to ensure high data quality throughout the entire life cycle of the data and identify opportunities for integrating project and core generated data with other existing data sets, therefore accelerating the impact of the center's research. So the list on this slide again is from the NOFO, and it shows a few of the data management coordinator responsibilities. And note the administrative core should de designate a point of contact to inform SRP staff of data deposition through the optional SRP data collection tool for when data is being deposited. Next slide, please. So just continue with the administrative core that is also required to coordinate graduate and postdoctoral level cross-disciplinary research experiences and training in fields related to biomedical research and environmental science and engineering research. Again, I'm not going to list all of these activities here because, again, they are in the NOFO. However, I do want to mention that you may recall that SRP defines trainees within the program as graduate students and postdoctoral researchers that perform research and/or activities that are supported by the center. Next slide. So, in addition to the activities under the training element, applicants may also request funds to support two Casey Donnelly externships. This has been a long-standing program since 2011, where SRP trainees can participate in multidisciplinary and translational research activities to improve the quality of the educational and training environment. So this is in honor of Dr. Casey Donnelly, who was a previously funded grant recipient of ours, known for his impactful mentorship. And the SRP has established this program to provide current SRP-funded graduate students and postdocs with translational and transdisciplinary opportunities and experiences within other SRP-funded centers. It could also, they can conduct these opportunities within government laboratories, such as EPA, ATSDR, and even NIEHS, or other agencies such as state, local, and tribal. The activities should be in coordination with the administrative core and the project and core leaders and should include a plan for recruiting and selecting center trainees for the externships, a description of how the trainees' activities will be guided, and how performance will be monitored and evaluated. I also wanted to mention that we have Jenny Greer. Again, Michelle mentioned this, but Jenny, she is the chief of our grants management branch, and she's also available on this webinar, and she'll go into further detail of how you can incorporate these opportunities into your application and address any questions that you may have. We hope that you'll take advantage of this opportunity for your trainees. And so, also, if you want more information about the SRP Casey Donnelly program, the links are provided here. Next slide, please. Also, so please keep in mind that for renewal applications, inquiry reviewers will want to know about your past trainee successes. And these can be included in the trainee list that is required in the other attachments under the administrative core. And we show an illustration here in this slide. Next slide, please. So, and to just to close out the description of the administrative core, we also want to mention that grant recipients are required to come to the SRP annual meeting. And here we're providing those key personnel that should attend. In addition, an SRP center should expect to host the annual SRP grant recipient meeting once within the project period and may want to set aside funds for this event. We would be happy to consult with you if you have any questions about this. So now I'm going to pass this presentation to our newest program administrator, Dr. Brittany Trottier, who will take you through the Translational Research and Engagement Core, the research projects, and the optional research support core. Brittany?
Great, thanks, Danielle. So in addition, all applicants are required to include a Translational Research and Engagement Corps, also known as the TREC. In support of the NIEHS strategic plan and its cross-cutting themes, SRP values not only solutions-focused research, but also its translation to enable health promotion, disease prevention, and evidence-based intervention. This is accomplished through two key core activities. The translational component, which is the TREC will coordinate with each research project to explore translational research opportunities appropriate for the stage and type of science, identifying opportunities to move the science across the research continuum, linking with potential stakeholders and end users of the research results, and tailoring communication strategies for various audiences. And there's also the stakeholder engagement aspect, where the TREC is expected to develop plans for the overall center's multidirectional engagement with its key partners, with the ultimate goal of enabling impacted communities and other stakeholders to be participants in the reduction of the amount and toxicity of hazardous substances, which is the prevention and intervention strategies and activities in their environment. And that is our SRP's fourth mandate. For the sake of time, more details about these two core activities are provided in the NOFO under the TREC's research strategy, and we suggest that you read and review those carefully. Examples of activities for the TREC may also be found in the suggested research and activities document found on our SRP website, also linked here. We also want to be sure that you carefully review the NIH guidance on clinical trials, because some activities, including surveys and with the intent to evaluate behavior change, may fall under the NIH definition of a clinical trial. Please visit the NIH clinical trial website for more information about determining if the activity should be classified as a clinical trial or not. So, like I mentioned, some activities, including surveys with the intent to evaluate behavior change, may fall under the definition of a clinical trial. We have a couple of resources available for the NIH clinical trial website, and then there's also a decision tool to determine if it's human subject research that we have linked on the screen. So now moving on to the research projects. As you may have seen in the RFA, the center's research projects, consisting of both biomedical and environmental science and engineering research projects, should represent a range of basic and applied research that contributes to the problem-solving, solution-oriented goal of the center. Projects should be hypothesis-driven or product-oriented research. For the biomedical research projects, a minimum of one and a maximum of two biomedical projects are required that should address biomedical or human health-related implications of hazardous substances. This includes, but is not limited to, toxicology studies, epidemiology, mechanistic studies, genetic susceptibility, computational toxicology, biomedical engineering, preclinical and clinical intervention, or efficacy of prevention studies. For the environmental science and engineering projects, a minimum of one and a maximum of two projects are required and should address environmental science or engineering implications of hazardous substances. These projects are integral to the protection of human health through predicting, detecting, and preventing exposures. The ESE projects include, but would not be limited to, remediation, geochemistry, ecology, civil and environmental engineering, geology, microbiology, fate and transport, hydrogeology, and detection sciences. We have provided great detail of what to include in the research strategy section for each of these types of projects, so we suggest that you read that section of the NOFO very carefully. We also provide you with a list of topics in the RFA and our suggested research and activities document that would qualify for biomedical project topics and environmental science and engineering topics. We also wanted to be sure that we mentioned the resource sharing plan. It also includes a translational research plan for each project and core. The resource sharing plan, individuals are required to comply with the instructions for the resource sharing plan as provided in the application guide, the how-to, with following modification. A translational research plan, the TRP, should be included for each project and core to describe how research resources and findings will be shared beyond the project. This TRP should include the sharing research resources and findings in coordination with the administration core. So that means the plans for interaction with the center's data management coordinator and training coordinator. A translational research aspect as well. And we provide some examples of what we mean. It also is recommended to cross-reference the TRP as appropriate within the table of end users and stakeholder field sites, and with the administrative core data management and training functions and the TREC functions with their respective component sections. Examples of the TRP activities can be found in the suggested research and activities document. So just a couple of important tips for the research projects. For example, centers should be very judicious in assembling the research projects. A center should, with projects, keep a clear focus and not try to do too much. Include projects with the most solid connection to the center's problem-solving theme. Include projects. Also, please note that the projects are often considered similar to an NIH R01 grant and are typically written in an R01 style. For those of you that might not be familiar with that type of grant, that's an investigator-initiated NIH grant. Don't forget to justify the use of your model organisms, for example, in vitro, in vivo, human subjects, the study numbers, dose, and exposure relevance. Another tip is to be sure to cross-reference interactions between projects and cores, and these interactions should be consistent throughout. You can refer to your table of integration with center in the overall component to highlight these interactions. Please try to avoid jargon, especially in your titles and abstract summaries. Don't assume that all reviewers will be well-versed in your project. Only the reviewers assigned to your project will be well-versed. Therefore, P42 reviewers will have broad expertise. Write the abstracts and titles for a general audience and write the specific aims for technical experts. Don't forget to define your abbreviations. And we highly encourage you to visit the NIH website on plain language. So applicants may include a research support core to provide centralized resources and services in support of the scientific goals of at least two projects. This may include, but is not limited to, analytical services, biostatistics, bioinformatics, geographical information systems, data visualizations, computational modeling, and others. If a research support core provides analytical and quantitative services to the center, a quality assurance section should be included. The quality assurance section should document a center's policy on implementing and assessing the effectiveness of its quality assurance and quality control operations. For guidance, please see the EPA's Quality Assurance Program website. I also want to mention that since the research support core is optional, they do not have a set budget, unlike the other components. They are limited to a 6-page research strategy, whereas the other components are limited to 12 pages. And finally, before I turn this over to Jenny Greer, the chief of our grants management branch, I wanted to provide some other tips for projects and cores. I wanted to remind you to pay attention to the sections of the NOFO for letters of support, resource sharing plan, authentication of key biological and chemical resources, biohazards, and appendix. And please be careful with the items that you add to the appendix. If you have questions about what you can add and can't include in the appendix, please be sure to ask our peer review contacts at CSR. Note that reviewers do pay attention to these things, so it's best that you do not forget them. Speaking of reviewers, I'm going to turn the presentation quickly over to Danielle before we go to Jenny to go over the review criteria.
Thanks, Brittany. So just so you all know, we don't have anybody here from CSR to address any questions about the specific review format, but we ask that you carefully review all of the review criteria, especially what is underlined in the NOFO as specific to this NOFO. Also, if you're proposing any clinical trials, there is additional review criteria for that as well. So our suggestion at this time is that you reach out to CSR using the contact email address that we've provided in the NOFO if you have any questions about the review. So next slide, Brittany, please. Okay. And so just to summarize, as you can imagine, we know that there are many parts to putting together a center. So to be successful, projects and cores need to be uniformly meritorious, demonstrate interaction, address a major problem and theme, and to aid stakeholders in effective decision-making. Again, I cannot stress enough that if you're interested in developing an application, please do not hesitate to contact one of us, or again, to use the nofo.information email address. We are certainly here to help. And now I'm going to turn the presentation over to Jenny Greer for her guidance on policy and budgets for your application. Jenny?
Hello, everyone. So good to be here with you today. As was mentioned, I'm the Chief of Grants Management here, and I wanted to talk through some policy issues and also some of the budgetary information on how to submit. So first, we want to go through some policies and priorities. So the first thing I want to mention is that what I'm saying today is accurate today, but as you know, we've been having a lot of changes over the last year, and even beyond that. And so there may be continuing to be changes. So please stay updated. The first way to stay updated is to visit this website that is listed here for the notices of NIH policy changes. Whenever we make policy changes at NIH, a guide notice is issued to alert the grantee community and the applicant community of those changes. So please go to this website. You can sign up for a weekly email to get a list of all the policies that have changed that week. And that can be a really helpful way to stay on top of things. The second link here is to a website called Implementation of New Initiatives and Policies, and it is also a really helpful resource for the changing policies. Next slide, please. So I wanted to go over just a few guide notices that have recently come out that will likely affect your applications to this RFA. The first is that NIH has recently implemented the use of the common forms for bio sketches and other support documents. So what this means is that when you are submitting an application, you will have to use the common form for the bio sketch to include in your application for all personnel. Please keep in mind that in order to do that, you will have to get an ORC ID. So that, and that process can take some time. So make sure you start early on that. The second guide notice listed here is that NIH applications must be complete and compliant at the time of submission. So this is really important as you are submitting your application to make sure everything is complete and in compliance with the RFA, because if it is not, it will be removed from consideration. So make sure you don't wait till the very last day to submit, because if you do that, you may end up not having your application reviewed. The third guide notice here that I, or the third guide notice here that I wanted to mention is an update on the NIH implementation of the Uniform Administrative Requirements for Federal Financial Assistance. So this year in 2026, NIH adopted two CFR 200, but there are a few very important exceptions. The first is that NIH recipients can only charge indirect costs on the first $25,000 of a subaward. The 2 CFR 200 allows you to charge on the first 50,000, but we are not implementing that. So in your application, please only include indirect costs on the first $25,000 of your subaward. The second exception is that NIH will still use $5,000 as the threshold for equipment. And if you have subrecipients that do not have indirect cost rates, the de minimis indirect cost rate is remaining at 10%. So those are three exceptions to the 2 CFR 200 that NIH is implementing. The last guide notice that I wanted to point out to you is for those applications that might include any projects, including basic experimental studies in humans. These are no longer considered clinical trials, and so they would be allowable under this RFA. This RFA does not allow clinical trials, but BESH is no longer considered clinical trials. So for more information on any of these topics, please go and read the actual guide notices. They will be very helpful for you to understand as you are preparing and submitting your applications. Next slide, please. Next, I wanted to touch on NIH priorities. As you may know, over the last year and a half, the NIH priorities have shifted a bit, and we wanted to make sure that applicants are aware of the NIH priorities that typically we see touching on our P42 program. So keep in mind that all applications and all projects must be fully aligned with the NIH priorities. These are described at the NIH website listed here, and there's a QR code so you can go and take a look at it. Of that list, the two priorities that we see most frequently touching on the P42 program are the first is promoting research focused on scientifically valid, measurable health outcomes. We want to make sure that any measures that you are using are scientifically valid and are measurable, that we can actually track what they are. Keep in mind that broad or subjective claims should not be presented as established background facts. So a lot of times we'll see some things in the background, things like discussions of climate change, when in reality you are studying the effects of extreme heat or extreme dust. So that's one area that we see touching on our P42 program. The second area that we see very frequently is the priority of training future biomedical scientists. It's important to remember that all programs should allow trainees to design and conduct the highest quality of scientific studies, and that they should be based on merit and follow civil rights law and not discriminate against anyone. So these are just two excerpts. There are many other priorities there that may also affect your P42 application. So please take a look at that website and make sure that all of the documentation that you submit is fully aligned with these priorities. Next slide, please. So I wanted to talk now about our budget preparation. As you know, and as you have heard, this is a rather complex program, and it's a multi-component project program, which means that you will need to have a little bit more complex structure of the budget. Next slide, please. So I wanted to remind you of some of the things that have been mentioned already today. The first is related to the budget caps. So as was mentioned previously, applicants may request up to $1.75 million in direct costs each year, and then applicable indirect costs. As I just mentioned, the indirect costs may only be requested on the first $25,000 of each subaward. Was previously mentioned also that the center director must commit 1.8 calendar months of effort to the administration of the center. And the sum of the direct costs for the administrative core and the translational research and engagement core cannot exceed 25% of the total direct costs of the entire project per year. It is important to remember that you must include costs for travel for staff that are required to attend the SRP annual meeting. These must be included in the budget. Next slide, please. So I wanted to walk through the budget by component because some of the sections you're going to have to include a lot of information that is very specific to that core or project, and others are less so. So the overall budget that you will submit, it's a section that is an aggregation of other information provided. So please do not try to submit a separate detailed overall budget. In the administrative core, as was mentioned, the administrative core and TREC together cannot exceed 25% of the total direct costs. And this should include the center director effort at 1.8 calendar months. It may also include salaries for the center director, data management coordinator, training coordinator, center administrator, and for any other individuals that are responsible for the data collection tool entry. You are allowed to include some training activities here, so make sure you read the NOFO to understand which training activities should be included in the administrative core and which should be included elsewhere in the budget. It is important to note that compensation for trainees should not be included in the administrative core. They should be included in their respective core or project where the trainee is actually working. Travel to the annual SRP meeting must be included in the administrative core, and any Casey Donnelly funding that you are requesting may also be included here. Next slide, please. So let's talk a little bit about the Casey Donnelly program. As was mentioned, this is kind of subsumed under the administrative core. Applicants may, according to the NOFO, request up to two Casey Donnelly externships per year. And this includes up to $10,000 of direct costs per externship, which would cover the cost of travel, supplies, and housing. Now, your Casey Donnelly expenses must be included as a line item in the administrative core budget under the other section. And it should note that it's Casey Donnelly. Then the budget justification must provide a breakdown of all the expenses, how much travel, how much housing, how much supplies. It needs to be in sufficient detail that we in grants management are able to look at it and determine if those costs are reasonable and allowable. Keep in mind that Casey Donnelly funds will be restricted in your notice of award only for the use of Casey Donnelly externships. If you do not award any Casey Donnelly externships, those funds will not be available for use for other expenses unless you come in with a prior approval request and that prior approval request is approved. Next slide, please. So let's move on to the Translational Research and Engagement Core. The only piece that is unique here is that, again, this combined with the administrative core cannot exceed 25% of total costs. But otherwise, you'll fill out this budget just the same as you do any other SF424 budget. For research projects, you would include any data management and sharing costs that are appropriate to that particular research project. Make sure that you very clearly define and describe these data management sharing costs so that we can understand how to deal with them on our side once we get the applications in. If any part of the salary is considered as part of DMS costs, then you must provide the dollar amount in the budget justification, even though your costs will be showing in the regular salary line. And finally, the research support core does not require any special budgetary, has no special budgetary limitations. Next slide, please. So let's talk for a minute about your budget preparation. So the first thing to note is that when you go in to submit your budget, there is a button that you will need to, or a box that you will need to click to show that this is a multi-component project. Please make sure that you click that box. Otherwise, you will submit your budget as a single component budget and we won't be able to review it properly. So please make sure you click that box. And then you will provide a detailed categorical budget for each project, for each core, and for each subaward or consortium partner in each project and core. Please keep in mind that NIEHS does not allow any subawards to subawards. So if you are thinking of doing what we call a third tier subaward, you will need to bring that up to a second tier so that the relationship will be between the applicant and directly with that sub recipient. If you are going to put in when you put in your budget and you see that costs are increasing year after year, say the first year you're asking for $100,000 and the second year you're asking for $130,000 in that particular project or core, you need to make sure that you are providing an explanation in the budget justification of why there's an increase year after year. And this leads to the question of escalation or inflation. A lot of institutions do provide escalation and inflation in their budgets. You may ask for it. That is up to you if you would like to do that. But please keep in mind that NIEHS does not currently provide any escalation and inflation. And so when we get the application in and we're working it up, we will actually remove any escalation that we identify. Next slide, please. So let's talk for a minute about the budget justification that accompanies the budget that you are providing. You will be required to submit a budget justification for each quorum project and again for each subrecipient. So you can't roll it all up into just one justification. We ask you to please be detailed and specific. The budget justification is not the place to elaborate on the PI's expertise or their research interests. That is not what the budget justification is for. So please make sure you limit it to actually justifying the budget itself. We want to make sure that you itemize the costs. So what we don't like to see is get a lump sum of $100,000 for materials and supplies without enough detail for us to really understand whether the costs are reasonable and allowable. You will want to make sure that any additions or changes in subsequent years, so not just the first year, but all the out years, are well justified and identified, especially when there are changes in personnel effort. Another question for you to ask yourself is, do I think there is enough detail here to allow grants management staff to determine if costs are reasonable and allowable? That's a really important part of our job, is to make sure that when we're putting funds out the door, that we understand what they're going to be spent on and that that seems like a reasonable, like a prudent person looking at that cost would think, yes, that's a reasonable amount of money to spend on that. And so it's really important that you have enough detail that we can make that evaluation. And then one of the very common issues that we see is that we'll see in the budget, we'll see a certain dollar amount. And then when we look at the budget justification, the amount that is justified does not match what is in the budget. So please make sure that all your justification justifies all the dollars you are asking for, not just a portion of them. Now, a common question that we receive is about subawards. So a lot of these grants, they are large grants, in the past have had subrecipients as sub-applicants as part of the application coming in. And so there's a question sometimes of whether or not the indirect costs for those subrecipients will count against the direct cost cap for the applicant. And the answer to that is no. They are direct costs for the applicant, but they do not count against the direct cost cap. And that's, if you're interested in the policy, it's found in the grants policy statement in section 2.3.7, if you want to go look it up and get it in writing. So that is probably helpful for folks to know. Next slide, please. So I wanted to mention one thing with the budget form itself. This is a common issue that we see is when you are submitting your budget form, this is section E of the SF-424. It has a section called participant and trainee support costs. That is not for this grant. Please do not use this section at all. That is only for our training grants here at NIH, our T32 program. So do not use it for any other program. Do not use it for this program. Next slide, please. So I wanted to touch briefly on some of the most common budget errors that we see as we are looking at applications coming in. The first one is that the exceeding the cap on the NOFO. So the NOFO has a cap. Do not exceed that. Please submit it for that amount or less. As I mentioned just a moment ago, costs in the budget often, more often than I would like, differ from the amount that is justified in the budget justification. We also sometimes see that salaries exceed the NIH salary cap, so be aware of those limitations. And also graduate student costs sometimes exceed the graduate student caps. So we have guide notice out on both of those to let you know what those caps are. So please be aware of those policies. One of the things that we sometimes see is that the calendar months of effort are less than the requested salary. So please keep in mind that if you're committing a certain amount of effort, it has to be at least the amount that you're requesting salary for. You cannot request salary for 2 calendar months of effort and then claim to commit only 1.8 calendar months of effort. We often see also a miscalculation of indirect costs. So just make sure you're using your most recent indirect cost rate agreement when you submit your application, and make sure that you are calculating the exclusions from the indirect cost base appropriately before submission. A really common, it's not just a budget error, but a really common error that we see is that folks wait until the very last minute to contact NIH with questions, budget clarifications, or any other questions. And then even worse than waiting to the last minute is not asking the questions at all. And so those are some of the common errors and challenges that we see with submitting applications to a program like this. Next slide, please. So there are some questions for those who are submitting a renewal application who have current awards. So if you have a current P42 award, then your existing project is nearing its end date and you have not received a notice of award indicating that your renewal application has been awarded, then there are a couple of options for you in that situation. You can first of all go into the Commons and self-execute a no-cost extension through the Commons. The grants policy statement link is there of where you can find information about that process. If, however, there are no funds available and you need some additional funding to continue to support you until a decision is made on your Type 2 application, or and you feel like you would need a funded extension, then you can submit a request for a funded extension. The grants policy reference for that is also on this slide. And what you would do is you would submit a funded extension request through the Administrative Supplement NOFO. It has to be submitted before the end of the project period. However, it's important to keep in mind that a submission of such a request does not guarantee approval. And so it is important to keep that in mind and plan accordingly. And finally, it's really important to know that you cannot submit, or we cannot consider a funded extension request if you have gone into the system and self-executed a no-cost extension, or if you've requested a no-cost extension from us. So please keep in mind that those are mutually exclusive. You either get a no-cost extension or you get a funded extension, but you cannot have both. All right, and next slide, that may be the last slide that I have. And that is it. I think we've got some resources here that hopefully will be helpful for you, and I will hand it back over to Michelle.
All right, thank you so much, Jenny. I see a lot of questions coming through the chat. Or the Q&A, sorry, and I see a lot of people answering them. So thank you so much. I just have a few more slides to walk you through. So one is just a couple of
final thoughts. First, submit early. You're given a window, a small window to correct any errors. So we just would hate for you to submit, realize there's an error, and you can't correct it in time, and now your application's late. So we would just really reinforce it. It's just such a good idea to submit early. Second, we're here to help. We encourage you to reach out to, if you're contemplating submitting an application, we have the NIHS program contact. So the program officers, again, are Daniel Carlin, Heather Henry, and Brittany Trache. So if you're thinking about submitting an application and wondering if it's something that's responsive to the RFA, then those are the people that you're going to want to contact. We're not going to help you design an application, certainly, but we are here to help you to the best of our ability. If you prefer, you can also use just the NOFO centralized email, if that's your preference. If you use that email, definitely one of the three program officers will be able to see that and can respond to your question. We also, as you just heard from, you heard from our Chief of Grants Management here at NIHS, Jenny Greer. So she is also a valuable point of contact. You can also reach her at Grants Management if you prefer through that centralized email. Peer review contact, as Danielle mentioned earlier, we do not have someone from CSR on the line, but we do have, there is a review contact that is listed in the funding opportunity. And so also just as you are reaching out, it's so very helpful if you could put the NOFO number, so the RFA ES 27004 in the subject line of your email, and that will just easily help us distinguish this is an important question we need to get to straight away. The next, I want to leave you with some resources. Several of them, you have seen these throughout the presentation, but again, we just wanted to summarize some of these for you. We have a website on our own NIHS page where you can link directly to the RFA, which also links to all these resources. A suggested research and activities document, that doesn't mean that's the be-all, end-all, but it's just things that we're putting together, especially to help those folks who this might be your very first time applying. We have some additional resources that are listed for you. We mentioned that there's our website, and from there you can look to see who's currently funded, what kind of projects are they proposing. So that might give you a little bit, especially those who are new to SRP and interested in this funding opportunity. A human subjects research tool. Also, just to reiterate again, the clinical trial aspect. So just please make sure you're looking at that. On the line, we do have Michelle Campbell, who's here to ask any questions if should you have them. This is not the only time you can reach out. If you do have questions, again, reach out to your program officers here or the centralized email that will take you to the program officers. Next slide is we're moving into some questions. And the next couple of slides, so don't go to that yet, Brittany, but we'll tee up a few things. But first, importantly, some acknowledgments. For those of you who are familiar with the program, you know we utilize EPA's Clue-In platform and the wonderful folks who support it a lot. So just a special thank you to Jean Ballin and Ray Ledbetter. Also, just to let you know that if you find yourself with a question that we couldn't answer during this webinar, again, you can reach out to the program officer email, the grants management email, the CSR email, or just those that standardized email, and we will reach out to you and we'll reach back out to you to the best we can to answer that question for you. We will also try to post these frequently asked questions on our funding opportunity webpage as well. So we're navigating all of this together. As Jenny mentioned, we've had several changes over the last year or so. So we just want to try to provide you with the best of information as possible. So next slide. And so, a little plug for the next Progress in Research Center webinar. So these are the folks who were supported by the last RFA. We had a first one that on Monday. And if you didn't get a chance to view that, you should feel free to view the recording, which I think will be available soon. The next one is coming up on July 16th. So the link is there if you're interested. I would encourage you just to go ahead and register, even if maybe you're not available, because the nice thing that Clue In does for you is it'll alert you and let you know when the recording's available. So it kind of serves as a reminder. All right, next couple slides. What we tried to do, but I don't know that we really needed to do that because I see lots of questions coming through the Q&A pod, which is very wonderful to see. But some of these I think are going to tee up maybe some of the ones that you didn't see that were answered. So one is, could you please confirm whether this opportunity is intended to limit institution to a single application total, or whether multiple applications from the same institution are permissible provided they are distinct? So the answer is one application per institution is allowed, and if you're looking through the Q&A pod, you will see that I believe someone from grants management did qualify that, like what constitutes an institution. And it's the institution number. So it has to be different. And so that's what's going to define an institution. And then there was a related question that we received actually through that NOFO email. Is this the same as limited competition? So those two things are confusing. So the one application per institution, that's what we are, that is the policy here. We apologize, it was a little bit confusing in the RFA, but this is what the policy is. And for limited competition, what that means is in our mandates, we always had this. And that means that only institutions of higher education are eligible to apply. So that has not changed. That's always been what we've done if you look back through all the RFAs. The second question we wanted to tee up, are foreign components allowed? And this NOFO does not allow foreign components. Next question is, what is the minimum and maximum number of projects? And so we peppered this in here because we really wanted to make the point that this is a difference from previous NOFOs. And so here we have, before, we used to require 4 research projects, 2 biomedical and 2 environmental science and engineering. This go around, we are not requiring 4. We are requiring at least 3, but you can have 4 if you would like. Now, there are a couple options that you can pursue. So if you happen to be a center who has 2 biomedical research projects and 1 environmental science and engineering research project, you would be responsive to RFA. What we're really looking for is we want you to be developing applications that are the strength of your science. And so just to try to give you some flexibility. And so the same thing, vice versa, when you could have 1 biomedical research project and you can have 2 environmental science and engineering projects. And of course you could do 2 and 2, or you can do, you have to have at least 1 biomedical and at least 1 environmental science and engineering. And I want to point out that someone in the Q&A pod did ask, is there still that requirement for addressing mandate 4, which is basic biological, chemical, and physical methods to reduce the amount and toxicity of hazardous substances? And yes, one of those environmental science projects must address mandate 4. So if you have only 1 ESC project, it needs to be addressing that. If you have 2, one of them can, and you can use another, you can have another project that is addressing another aspect of our mandates. And let me see, I think I have one more slide before we turn it back over to Brittany, who is going to help moderate the Q&A, the rest of the Q&A, the live Q&A portion. So what is the process of reaching out to SRP staff to speak about my application idea? So just really want to say, we're here for you. You can reach out to one of the program officers on the previous couple slides ago. This was a typo. We will fix this and repost these slides with any mistakes that we've noticed. And I'm sure everybody's noticed at least 1 or 2 little things. So we'll try to correct them to the best of our ability. So they're a resource that you can use moving forward. But you can reach out to the program officer that we listed. So again, the program officers are Daniel Carlin, Heather Henry, and Brittany Chache. Or you can choose to reach out to that NOFO information, the program contents right in the NOFO. That'll still take you to everybody. So either way, whatever you're more comfortable with. The next question is, I'm not ready to apply this year, but, you know, I'd like to review. What should I do? And you can, that's always something that helps you get a feel for this multi-project center applications. And we encourage you, if you are interested in doing this, to contact the peer review contact that you saw in the Notice of Funding Opportunity or the NOFO about your interest in reviewing. And they'll take it from there. And again, as you're asking that question, please make sure that you put in the NOFO number, which is RFA ES27004, in the subject line of your email. And that just helps anyone who's responding to that email just to be able to easily identify what the topic is. All right. And I think this next slide is just a, we've already talked a little bit about the progress in research, but we wanted to transition to those live questions. So I'm going to turn it over to Brittany, who's going to help moderate those live questions. Brittany, are you ready?
I'm ready. Thanks, Michelle. All right. So I will start with the first question here. Is it acceptable for the same person to serve both as the director of the Research Support Corps and data management coordinator within the administrative corps? Michelle, go ahead.
Sure. I'll go ahead and answer the first couple of these. So yes, I mean, I think we're not prohibiting that. I think the thing that you're going to want to look for is, you know, does that make sense? You know, the reviewers are going to be looking at, you know, your workload, for instance, but I would say it's acceptable.
All right. Moving on to the next question that came in. So all four of the SRP mandates require development of techniques, methods, biological, chemical to investigate, remediate, and mitigate Superfund chemicals. Does this mean that epidemiological and toxicological projects that investigate health effects of these chemicals are outside of the scope of this mandate as they are not novel methods or technologies?
I'm really glad that somebody asked this question because yes, you would still be within the mandates. And if you look at what the mandates, read our NOFO RFA, I'm going to interchange the two. There is a nice section for each of the mandates that describes the type of research projects, you know, just for example, that would fit under them. And you're going to see similar to the one that was listed here.
Okay. Next question that came in is, what exactly is a Superfund relevant research problem?
Okay. So Superfund relevant is, you know, so we have you saw the broad mandates that we had. So we really want to be having people who are coming together in an interdisciplinary fashion, because we know that you need multiple vantage points to address these complex problems at Superfund sites. What we're looking for is you're addressing Superfund relevant exposure pathways. We're also looking at, are you looking at hazardous substances that are relevant to Superfund? And if you refer to our RFA, you're going to see both of those things listed for you. And I would just also take this opportunity to point out that we're not site specific, so you don't need to be at a Superfund site, but we do like you to be Superfund relevant. And maybe I'll just turn it over to somebody else to answer, because I hate to monopolize the time here.
Okay, there's a question that I can answer right now. So is the Casey Donnelly externship limited to the opportunities and experiences that are listed? For example, if there is an opportunity for the trainee to pursue an internship involving Google and Waters to use AI for the analysis of data of a complex matrix, would it not be considered? That would not be considered because the projects have to be involved with the host. Needs to be a federal, state, or local lab or an SRP-funded grant recipient. So it would have to be, or tribal. It could also be a tribal lab or a tribal area. So they cannot be outside of SRP-funded grant recipients or local, tribal, or federal institutions. Let's see, we've already answered the remediation project question. Sorry, my computer just froze. Okay, now I can see the rest of the questions. So is the TRP to be written within the project proposal or in a separate document?
So that's the translational research sharing plan. So my understanding is that is part of a separate document, but let us make sure that we've got that right. And if it's not, we'll correct that in our frequently asked questions. Did we lose you, Brittany? Or did we lose me?
I can still hear you, Michelle.
Okay, thank you.
Can you
hear
not
me
you.
Now? Sorry, I
yep.
appear to be having some technical difficulties.
Okay, I can take what I think might be the next question, and you all are gonna have to help me and just like click answer live. Pete, I'm very sorry. I didn't double check how to do this before the webinar. I am not going to get a gold star. The new NOFO refers to gold standard science. Are there new criteria assessing the quality of science that are different from traditional peer review and impact? Also, if we're working on the latest innovation, okay, wait, so let's just answer that. So I'll just say there's not a specific review criteria for gold standard science. Applicants should incorporate and reviewers assess the principles of the NIH gold standard science plan. And there's actually a link that I will try to put in the chat. And Jenny, I see that you wanted to answer this question live, so please jump in.
I was actually not trying to answer it live. I was trying to type the answer and put the link in it.
Okay.
But then it disappeared once I clicked on that. So as soon as I can find it again, I'll put the link there.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, that's exactly what happened to me. And I was like, clearly I should have done my homework. And then if we are working on the latest innovations for assessing the potential of critical, oh, I lost it. Let's see. Oh no. Okay. Brittany, I might have you go back and ask a few questions, and then I will try to answer that second part of that question.
Let me read it to you, Michelle. I found it.
Okay. Thank you.
So this is also, if we are working on using latest innovations for assessing the potential of critical minerals recovery at legacy hard rock mining sites, this may not include biomedical science type research. In such cases, are we allowed to substitute the physical material science projects?
Thanks, Jenny. I'm not quite sure what you mean by that, but maybe what I will just remind folks is you can have a different combination of one biomedical project and a couple ESE projects. So you do have some flexibility there. We just need you to be within our mandates and looking at a hazardous substance that is applicable to Superfund. But what I might suggest for you is if you haven't already worked with a program officer, reach out to maybe the NOFO email and someone will get in contact with you. Okay.
Can you hear me now? I think I've got everything taken care of. All right. So the next question, I believe this would be for Jenny. What if trainees are part of the DMAC? Where should their stipend and cost be budgeted if not in the admin core?
I think that's actually a programmatic question because that is a programmatic requirement.
Okay, and trainees are part of the DMAC. Where should the stipend cost be budget if they're not in the admin core? That's the question that was been So the DMACC, we have incorporated the data management functionality into the admin core. So we would say because the admin core, is limited to less than 25% of the direct costs of the total center, we're recommending, for you to consider where is that person residing. So if it is part of data management, then it might make sense to do it in the admin core, but it might make sense to put it across the respective projects that that person might be serving.
All right, next question. I accidentally skipped this one. Should the admin core also provide guidance for effectiveness of training?
So the admin core does contain the training aspects. So in the admin core, the expectation is there's going to be someone who is going to be overseeing the training aspects. So just kind of keep that in mind as you are preparing your application.
All right. Next question. Sorry, the Q&A keeps jumping around.
It does keep jumping around. It's tricky.
I keep losing my spot. My apologies to everybody while I deal with this. Okay, so a note was made that no need to focus on a specific site for the track. What if we have a site for community engagement already? Can we keep it and show broader applicability? Go ahead, Michelle. I see you're about to talk.
Yeah, no, I was just, I would, this is addressed in the RFA, and we're always going to point you to the RFA because that is kind of like the thing you're always going to want to refer back to. And for that the new core that includes the translational research and engagement components, we are looking for definitely the community engagement and also end users and stakeholders that make the most sense for the problem that your particular center is trying to address.
All right. Let's see. There's a couple of comments. I'm just scrolling past the comments to get to the questions. Okay.
I'll just maybe jump in with a few things as I see them before it jumps on me, Brittany, and then maybe you can.
Thank you. Jumping around.
So, will the review process be online and in person? That is something that is up to CSR. So, we're working with them. They know about. They obviously know about this wonderful program that's coming through, but it's ultimately their decision. There's a question about if we submit this September 2026 deadline and you do not get funded, will we have time to receive our reviews and reapply for the 2027 deadline? I would have to do some math and get back to you on that, but keep in mind there are a couple of avenues. So we will we'll put that in the frequently asked question. But in the meantime, what we can say is there's three receipt dates on this recent NOFO. And as we pointed out earlier in the presentation, there's a couple other ways that Superfund research program supports science to support our mandates. There's also the unsolicited application option. Okay.
While we're looking for other questions, can I suggest a topic that has come up many times in the question Q&As related to hosting the annual meeting? So there are a lot of questions about whether or not this is required and whether or not additional funding is being provided. So is it okay if I go ahead and address some of those, Michelle?
Yes, please. Thank you, Jenny.
Okay. So the first thing is additional funding is not being provided. So you would include these costs in your budget. You can include them as a separate line item in one of the years. That is perfectly fine. But what our suggestion is that you understand that some of the funds that you are going to receive, if you receive this, would be expected to be used for hosting the Superfund meeting. There was a question of why don't we do it through supplements? There are many administrative reasons why going through the administrative supplement process is not the way for us to be able to host this moving forward. And so that's kind of where we are. I know there were some questions about whether or not it is mandatory. And as indicated in the RFA, it says that an SRP center should expect to host the annual SRP meeting once within the project period and may want to set aside funds for this. It also says to please consult with your program staff if you have questions, if you need details on that. So feel free to reach out to program staff, but I did want to make sure that we were addressing some of those questions.
Okay, thank you so much. Let's see. Is a one-page introduction allowed for resubmission? So like a progress report? Yes, typically the progress reports are submitted as part of your research strategy for each applicable component. The next question, if a center program director is also an investigator on one of the research projects, can the 1.8 calendar FTEs be spread across the components? It seems that the expectation is 1.8 in a main core and then in another component. Yeah, so the center director is expected to commit 1.8 months towards directing the proposed center. So that's expected. Okay, let's see what else we have. Access the slides. I think probably that was something, and I'll just maybe take this opportunity to say these slides will, we're noticing just a couple things we want to tweak. So we will post them, repost them to Clue-In, but right now you can actually grab what we've posted so far.
Michelle, can I break in with one more question that I answered, but I'd like to make it clear for everyone here?
Absolutely.
There was a question on foreign components. Are international collaborations allowed under this RFA? And the answer to that is no. It is indicated in the NOFO that foreign components are not allowed. It is really important to keep that in mind as you are working on your application. And please note that a guide notice just came out, I think it was this week or late last week, dealing with foreign components, with the definition of foreign components and how that interacts with co-authorship. So please make sure that you read that guide notice. And of course, you can reach out with any questions that you have. But I did want to make that make you aware of that guide notice.
Thank you. And I don't know if we included that guide notice in the slides, but what we can do, Jenny, is update the slides to include that new guide notice so you guys have it handy at your fingertips. All right. I am just looking at the time and we are just about out of it. And so I will just looking to see if there's something really quick that we can answer. Go ahead.
The question came in, can you clarify the anticipated frequency of the future P42 center funding opportunities? So with this NOFO, the P42 is now on an annual competition where, and the NOFO will be active for the next three receipt dates of September 2026, 2027, and 2028. So hopefully that clarifies that.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. So I'm seeing that we are out of time, but not, this does not mean that you can't reach out to us again. Hopefully you found this helpful, maybe clarified some of the things that you still had questions on. But if you find yourself with more questions, please reach out to program officers listed in the slide in the slides that were provided in this presentation, or Jenny, our Chief of Grants Management, or of course you can always just reach out using that generic email that was provided in the NOFA, whatever makes the most sense for you. We hope that you know we're here for you. And we just want to say thank you again for your interest in this RFA, and wish you best of luck with your application, and hope this is not the last time we hear from you. All right, everybody, thanks again. I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thank you, Michelle. I'm going to kick things over to just a couple of reminders for Clue-In before we wrap up formally for today. So I'm going to go ahead and, Brittany, I'm going to take control back from you and bring up our closing slides here. So a couple of reminders, especially relevant resources given the content of today's webinar. One, presentation materials are located on the webinar homepage. If you'd like to download the presentation from today, especially with the contact information for any additional questions you may have, that's going to be under webinar slides and references on the webinar homepage. Also drop this in the Q&A for those of you that already saw it there. Also, we have a feedback form that's available. We highly encourage everybody to fill this out for a couple reasons. One, you can provide us any comments on format, content, delivery mechanism, anything and everything related to this webinar. Certainly questions you want to redirect to NIHS, but anything that is feedback on this webinar, please submit that through our feedback form so we can improve our service delivery mechanisms over time. And as an added plus, you can request a participation certificate. A lot of our Clue-In visitors find those helpful for documenting participation in webinars like these. That covers everything that I was going to cover here. So be sure to, and then also the Progress and Research webinar that Michelle mentioned, that was this past Monday. We will have the archive of that available tomorrow, June 4th, on Thursday. So those of you that registered for it or were unable to participate for whatever reason, you'll receive an automated email notification. Everybody else, you'll be able to browse that on the Clue-In webinar archives. That's clue-in.org/live. And with that, just wanted to thank everybody for participating and thank our presenters from NIHS for hosting today's event. Hope everybody found this to be beneficial and informative. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and formally conclude today's event. Thank you very much, everybody.